Okay, thank you. It's such a pleasure to have you. I can barely concentrate on the topic. Special occasion. So we were still on Pepin of a Chain. We had finished the mimer of Rav. And we have the question over here, whether the chus that the Torah gives to a father and a daughter, whether it includes elements of Kabbalah. It was very clear that it certainly doesn't include Tsar, certainly doesn't include Boshes. It certainly does include Shevet, because after all, that belongs to him anyway. But our question was, what about Nezek that extends beyond the period that the father is the owner, so to speak, beyond his rights? That was the Shiloh that we had. And we find that the same Shiloh came up between Reb Shlokish and Reb Yochanan. Now, we had distinguished yesterday, we had made it very clear, the way that it worked out a little bit, Rob, was that it actually depends. So in areas where we would have a reason to believe that there was a hakpada from the father, then the concept even of the shevet, if it came from outside and it wasn't going to cost him any money, then he was willing to have her keep it for himself. In anything that would either cost him money, such as when he himself does the nezek, he's not going to take money out of his pocket. Or if we have a person who is a kapdan, he's not being mezin his own children, then we have reason to believe that he is in fact makpid and wants to collect everything that the Torah was mezakeh him on. Today, benogea, the element of the nezek that extends beyond him, we have a shiloh like this, and the machlok is like this. The chain omer Shlokish, like Rav, lo zichta Torah la'avel shevach ne'urim bilvad, and in fact, only shevach ne'urim is given to the father, as opposed to rights for damages. Rav Yochanan omer afilu ki'ah, which is very strange, because the ki'ah is the example of a type of nezek that is not negiah the father, before, that does not cause anything that's going to affect his ability to sell. It means like a cut or something. Where would we have a type of nezek like that? If we want to sell sort of a type, is it possible that Rav Yochanan is saying that the father is zoka even to damages of tziyah? People of Kavaza, look, I'm Yibayla, Yala Chabalah. All the Rav Yochanan was asking when he asked this question as to whether there might be things that the father was zoka to is something that affects his ability to get the full amount of kedushin and its associated income. So over there, the Afkata Mikastara, something that is now he's a seller and now she's not worth as much, so, but of tziyah? Well, how do you see a tziyah? I mean, that's not going to affect the father in any way, is it? Loka Mibayla, he wasn't even asking about it. I'm going to get through the Chanina. No. He's the leadership of the Chanina. Somebody hit her in the face. And that maybe the chance of a scar there or whatever will lessen her immediate value. And that is something that affects the father. And therefore, that's what Tami Katzba. So that, we have a machlokes between the Shlokish and the Yochanan, whether the schus to the daughter includes also the possible change in the value of something that extends both now and into the future. Hakozo bevetinani shalachevim chayav. So here we have a machlokes, which is again, I mean, a sheet that seems to come out of left field. That for some reason, although the Chachamim say you would pay all of the Chamisha Tashlumim, Rav Yehuda says, out of left field, well, a Neve doesn't have any Boshet. Now, we know that doesn't mean a Neve doesn't feel any Boshet. And that's certainly not the Kermit Club before that we even use a Nimker as an Eve, as an indicator, somebody who had in Kavona to be Mavayish as a Eve, he's Mavayish as a Chorin, so we pay the difference. And obviously, there's a value that even Rav Yehuda has noticed, and as the Gemara said before, I just don't have to pay it. Where in the world would you get a local like that? That just magically I don't have to pay something that I normally would have to pay just because he's an Eved. I mean, Eved normally has all of the rights in terms of collection just because somebody else owns the money. So we pay it, but we pay it to the master. Schenken, Rabbi Yehuda, is saying that I don't pay at all. How does he know that? Omar Krati Natsu Anashim Yachdav Ish Ve'achiv. A little bit strange way to talk about the way people are relating fraternally and say, when they are fighting each other, two brothers, yes, the man to his brother. So it's obviously it's stressing the fraternal relationship. It means to tell me, Mishi Yeshlo Achva, by the way, fraternity, of course, even in modern terms, doesn't literally mean that it's your brother. It means, hey, brother. In which case, over here, we would want to have an understanding in what sense the Torah means brotherhood. There's many different levels of brotherhood. And so, Rabbi Yehuda says this excludes an Eved, because an Eved, Elo Akvam, there's no real fraternity in the sense that he can't fraternize, literally. In other words, he cannot marry into Klal Yisrael. So we don't want him fraternizing with Jewish girls. That's also a level of fraternity. And the Rabbanim say, no, he is still called an Ach, because he's Achiv the B'mitzvah. There's a very fundamental level of fraternity, is that he's yours in terms of sharing the mitzvah, at least the mitzvah that he's chayevet bev, he's chayev. So now, it comes out according to Rav Yehuda, therefore, that when the Torah talks about the whole parsha of Boshet, the Kasoter, Kapha, and so on, it's going about a case where she went to save her husband from the attack of an Achiv. And this Eved not being an Achiv, she would not have to pay him for the Yechzika bin Vushat. There was no payment of Boshet at all. So ask the Gemara, wait a second. So according to Yehuda's very expanded vision of what Achiv means, so then according to him, Zilmanei Eved lo yarogu. It should turn out that you cannot be mazim, edim, that testify against an Eved, and we know that in fact an Eved is the cases of Eved where you throw kills in Eved and vice versa, and all of these are cases that are brought up all the time, because it says over there, Kasher Zaman La'asot La'achiv, and La'asot La'achiv, according to Rabbi Yehuda, means, but not to the Achiv, who is not Achicha, in the other Kaal, even. So that excludes Eved. Amar Rav Amar Pshesh, you'd be right, except for the fact that the Torah adds an additional inclusion over there, because it ends after Hashem Kasher Zaman La'asot La'achiv, U'bi'archa Haram Mikir Becha. Why is that necessary to say? Because it's telling me, expand that into anything that is Bekir Becha, get rid of the Ra. And that includes Avarim as well. Mikom Racha. Now, what about according to the way the Rabbanan is explaining Achva, that anybody who is related to you, the mitzvot, is considered to be an Ach? Well, we know that we don't interpret Achva in that way, because according to this, an Eved should be kosher to be a Melech. Mikir of Achicha. So he is Mikir of Achicha. You're saying he's because he's Ach the mitzvot. And the whole issue was that we're not going to accept even a ger, right? It was a female miyisrael, even a female miyisrael. How could they explain that achecha means over here somebody who's hired with mitzvah? Says the Gemara, Amir, what kind of picture of a ger? Let the Be'ah call. But you know, which was all like review of it? A ger certainly is considered to be achecha. Be careful, achecha. Leave the review as well. What are you asking the rabbanon for? No matter what interpretation you give to achecha, it is certainly is not the same one that we give from Malchus. We have some other criterion over there. So where did he get it from? Because we don't accept the ger either, even though he's totally mikarev achecha. And Omar Krop, mikarev achecha, shot mikarev achecha, means from within the inner sanctum of achecha, mikarev, that which is the closest, which means mimukhar shebe achecha. So we will not accept anything that is not in terms of its yichus and so on as mimukhar. Alright, so that isn't the problem of Malchus. But now, what about Eidus? According to Rabbanan Hussainah, that the meaning of Achicha or Achecha is to include anybody chayv in mitzvahs. Why isn't an Eved koshali Eidus? Dichtiv inei eid sheker, eid sheker ina be'achiv. And this, of course, Achiv is to the bidirectional. I mean, whatever he is, he is. And if that's the case, then the Achiv, according to Rabbanan, should include anybody who chayv in mitzvahs, even the mitzvahs that an Isha chayv to him. And that would include an Eved. Omarula, Eidut Lomatitan. The din of Eidut is not dependent only on the question of Achicha. Because, you see, we know that the Torah apostles Isha from Eidut, and we can learn out the din of the Eved from a Kavachomer mi Isha. And we'll say like this. If the din of an Isha, Shihi Ru'uyala Go Bekahal, she has limited mitzvot, but she certainly has full rights of being part of Klal Yisrael in terms of marriage, nonetheless she is pisulala edut. So an eved, who in addition to the fact that he's limited in terms of his mitzvot, is also in oro lilavo b'kahal, he can't marry into Klal Yisrael, in addition to pisul edut, so obviously it should be possible for edut. If you're going to say now, wait a second, it doesn't prove anything, because a woman, after all, has something that she is left out of mitzvot, which an eved isn't, namely, anisha is ena ru'uya lamila. Even though she's considered to be a famous rukayim, even though she's considered to be a nimolet, but she's not having the mitzvah, you know, it's too inyonim, the famous distinction between the state of being nimo and between the mitzvah of Knesset Labrit. She doesn't have a mitzvah of being the Knesset Labrit. Therefore, even though we say Nashim Mulinein in the Mitzvah of the Zohar, but not Megabe the mitzvah of the Mila, in which case it may well be that lacking that fundamental mitzvah, that's going to be a greater chisar than the fact that she's a Srul of Obikal. And therefore, so Kal will call me to an Evid. An Evid has Mila plus all of the other mitzvahs that he should try to understand. In which case, maybe he would be Royal Aedis. So all you're left with is the din of Ach. But according to the Rabbanan, he's included in Ach. So why then isn't he kosher for Aedis? No, says the Gemara, because Katan Yochiach, a Katan does have the Mila mitzvah. Now, that's the only mitzvah essentially will affect the cotton, right? And yet, he's possibly Aedis. Ah. We missed you. But we brought California to you. Malakatan.
Cousin's going to
stay
changed.
The cousin's going
to temporarily use that against him. Evidence
equal to that. Really? Not yet Chayev. He is Chayev. Cousin is Chayev in Mila. And nonetheless, he's possibly Evidence.
That's going to change.
So it's even better. You see that can't possibly be the reason that somebody would be fired. It's even better if a cousin is going to be the Enniklis or Kolmistis. So therefore, since it's Yeshua B'Mila, it's postulated. So what are you going to say? But a cotton is not chayev in all the mitzvahs, but if it is the mitzvah. So here we're getting into a classic ma'asah. Because Isha Sofia, and Isha will prove to us that she's Yeshua B'mitzvot, and she's still related. Okay, so that can't be the issue. Because Rabbi, Lori Zekriza, Hatzada Shevebesh Shevehen, she can end on the whole mitzvah. So what do we see over here? The Torah tells me that a katan is possible because he's only chayev in Mila. An isha is psula because she's not chayeves in Mila. Okay, so the common denominator is that someone who is not included in the full achievery of all mitzvahs is possible chayev. If that's the case, then Evid is also possible chayev, even though he's included the achva. So therefore, you can't ask him a rabbanon because we're going to learn it out from a mahatzad from isha the katan. So af ani aviyat ha'eved, she'eno b'chala mitzvot, u'pasula ha'it. But this is a rather obvious ma'atzar before you get the mitzvot. Ma'atzar ha'shavirim, she'eno ish. And the whole din of Eidus, in which we learn out actually, yishavadu shnei ha'anashim. We stress that it's shnei ha'anashim, v'lo nashim. So the same thing is true about a cotton. A cotton is not an ish. Unless you have a special riboy, it wouldn't mean it, but like by Kol Nefesh, right? Yaka Kol Nefesh, but the ish, we need a riboy that is ish, not cotton. So the ish was Yaka, and we're the same thing over here. So anybody who's not an ish, and Evid, last time I heard, is considered to be an ish, in which case you should be included in Eidus, if not for the Akha element. But the Rabbanan says included in the Akha element. It only works out a little bit of Yudah. Okay, wait a second. There's another school over here. How about a Gazla? That's any Gazlan. A Gazlan, after all, is also, even though he's apostle, but because he doesn't keep one of the mitzvahs, he's possible. Okay, so if that's the case, we come back again. The common denominator isn't an ish, because Gazlan is an ish. Nonetheless, he's possible, because he's cut out one of the mitzvahs from his life. Well, so there you go. So an Eved who has cut out mitzvahs, so he should also not be included. Wait. A Gazlan cut out mitzvahs. He wasn't cut out from the mitzvah. The God, not a Gazan, she came ma'asav gormulo. The Gazan puzzled himself. We're going to learn out from there Tomar be'eved she'im ma'asev gormula. Over there it's not ma'asev she'gormula. Over there it's just the fact that he's a woman, so to speak. So he's not chayev in all these other mitzvahs. So that's not going to help you. Okay, but suppose I put together Goslin in one of the other cases. Any of the other cases, the Yisha, the Katan, in those cases we don't have Ma'asav Gormulo, and we have, in the case of the Gazlan, also the fact that he's an Ish. So put it together, it's neither Ma'asav Gormulo, it's not Ish. So what is it? It's Sheinim B'chol HaMitzvot. That's a very good question. If you would be a din and mumer, what do we need specifically Goslin for? Okay, but the truth is, if he's a Russia, we're using over here Goslin in the sense of Russia. And the mucker for that is not his lack of trustworthiness. The mucker is al pashet yachayim Russia. It's a din in Russia. But the question of the focus on God is an interesting question. I don't know the answer to that. Margaret Ravina Amar, which is what, you know, you're all looking for Kabbalah. There's a pasuk which you're ignoring over here. Amar Kro, lo yumtu avot al banim. What is the chat? Lo yumtu avot. What does that mean? If it meant what we take it to mean literally, is that a relative is possible. You cannot use the children to be made. Don't you want to stress the relationship? The relationship is the fact that it's their children, not the fact that they are children. Should say it, b'nei hem. I mean, it's very, very striking that in the pasuk itself, it's coming to talk about the problem of relationship, and specifically you should avoid the one addition, right? And we have a suffix over here to imply that you're a relative. No, we leave that out. So what do you think that means? I'll tell you what it means. It means loyum tu al pi avot she'en lahem ki is banim. Normally the word banim would always, in the context of an av, be related to the av. Avot she'en, b'nehem. If what it's coming to me over here is an additional point, that if there exists an av and ben that are not related to each other, if you have a biological av and ben that are nonetheless, I cannot use that suffix, because it's not true, la locha, then they are false creators. That's what it's saying. So no person in the world should die based on the testimony of someone who is a ben that has no father. Or a father that has no ben, in this case. So there's an avot where we can't use a suffix of banav after him. So therefore, that would tell me that I cannot use an Eved. An Eved doesn't have any children. He may have biological children, but they're not his children that I could refer to as his children. The Yitzhak of the Atechid, I mean, if you're going to tell me that what means exactly what it says on the superficial level, so it, well, first of all, now, what do you tell? Now what? Loyim tu avot abanim, meaning the edut banim, that's where you take it? Mirtav Rahman, loyim tu avot abinehem. When you say banim, you're talking about somehow disembodied bunim from relationship, on bunim. And everybody in the world is bunim to somebody. So therefore the meaning must be shmamina. The lo yumtu alpi avot she'en lehem chiyus bunim. Where you have avot, biological avot, that nonetheless don't have the chiyus, they have no yichus to the children that are theirs. Now that would only exclude an eved. An eved does not have a relationship to the bonim that are his, and therefore those bonim remain unrelated to an av, and I can't suffix them to b'nehem. So wait, and what are you going to do with the end of the pasuk? It says, u'bonim lo yumtu al avot, because that would imply the opposite. That would imply that you also cannot allow testimony from anyone who is a ben without a father. But that would mean that a ger who has no father, no biological father, a ger would be possibly aided. Nobody would be given possibly aided. So if you're going to learn that part of the pasuk, then you have to learn the other part of the pasuk. Yes, the Gemara Lamiyatu, Bonim lo yumtu al avot, Achinami lo yumtu al avot, Bonim lehem chiyus avot, you can say the same thing. So you're going to tell me, ger, Achinami, the pasuk aidut? So you're saying that if somebody is a child that cannot be related back to his biological father, so then he is possibly aided. Ah, very good about that. No, I wouldn't interpret it that way. Because, you see, okay, there's a comparison. Ger, nihid emel chiyus l'mala, l'mata geish lo chiyus. We're only coming la fuke evidemo quis lola mala valola mata. And I'll show you why I'm saying this in a moment. But the difference is very, very clear. The difference is that an eved remains disembodied in terms of his relationship both upwards and downwards. He doesn't have any children, because biological children are not his. He doesn't have any pets, because the biological parents aren't his. So in terms of the halacha of pius, he's not related. Mashenkein, the ger, who may not have a biological past, but he has a halachic future besides his biological future. So that is not coming to be excluded from the pasuk. What right do I have to say that? I'll show you. Because let's assume for a moment that indeed it's not that way. So let's take the point of view for a moment that you're right, and that a ger is possibly aided. So then we don't need the pasuk as it's written. What we should have done was been much more effective. We should have written the pasuk like this. We should have said, lo yumtu avot al b'nehem. Because over there it could mean, lo yumtu be'edut banim. And it would stress the relative aspect by adding the hem, b'nehem, it's their children. And then continue, u'banim lo yumtu al avot. Because having established that banim lo yumtu al avot, that a ger is possible, and that anybody who is a child without a father is not partially hated, I don't need any longer to tell me the first part of the pasuk in the same language, correct? Because if a ger who is a one-directional yichus is possible, and eved who is a non-directional yichus, both from where he comes from and to where he's going, he has no yichus, for sure should be possible. Therefore, I could have left the original intent of the pasuk, the superficial intent of the pasuk, maintained the suffix in the first part of the pasuk, and told me only the second part of the pasuk, which implies that even a ger is possible. And then Shema Mina Trei, then I would have known both dinim. First of all, Chod Aloyim Tu Banim Be'edut Avot, then I would know that the relationship itself possible, and I would also have known Loyim Tu Alpi Banim She'en Lam Chiyas Avot. I would also know that a ger who has no Chiyas Avot is possible under any circumstances for testimony. And then an eved would be obvious. An eved naftalei b'kavakomer miger. If a ger, the lamala would ein lochias av lamata, yesh lochias is possibly eved. Eved, shein lochias, lo lamala v'lo lamata, certainly possibly eved. Ein adin shei possibly eved? Ela, mire katav rachmana lo yumtu avot al banim. Since the pasuk starts by saying lo yumtu avot al banim and foregoes the meaning of the psul of eved because of the kirva of the banim, that's telling me the Danka Loyum Tu Apiyavot Shein Lo Chiyus Banim, which tells me Danka, we are possibly someone who has no capability of having children. That's what bothers us, which is an Eved. And that includes Shema Mina Eved Shein Lo Chiyus Lolam Alav Lolam Ata, who's a possible La'edus. So it's where we have both Av and Bein without any context. So that lack of context means no edus. Avoger, kima de yeshlochi is lamata koshli edus. A ger, however, since it was put this way, would be koshli edus because he does have bunny. I still ask, if that's the case, then why didn't you, in the end of the pasuk, why don't you use the lashlam vikir vashat as opposed to the floating element? So you should have written at the end of the pasuk, ubanim lo yumtu ala botehen. Because after all, you're not coming to tell me a new drasha that even someone who doesn't have a father is possibly eved, to include ger, that you've already established is not the case. So then why not stress al avot eved in the end of the pasuk? So lomali, because of rachmana banim lo yumtu al avot, which indeed has the implication, which I now know to be not true, demach lo yumtu al pi banim she'en lam chiyas avot. Okay, that's not such a problem. Because the Torah has a feel for poetry and parallelism. I mean, what are you going to say? I mean, just because technically speaking it's also true that but once we wrote already, I did a katav lo yumtu avot al banim, katav nam yu banim lo yumtu al avot. But it's clear that you can't be coming to add, because then we're going to just left out the whole first part. So memela, it's got to be that the main import of this is to teach me the floating quality, which passes lack of chiyus, but only of an eved. And then we understand that I'm avoiding the stress on the kirva, even though there's certainly the din of the kirva by saying it this way, but maintaining the literary value of it, but I still have the halachic value embedded.
Maybe you're just showing my
the yeah, I don't understand. You leave him out when you know that he wants to get a bath every day.
It's my focus of whether I'm going to deal with Asma in terms of relationship or in terms of mission.
It's not really in terms of relationship. The matter of the act of relationships, and unless you're calling fraternizing relationships, you mean fraternizing relationships, but then this is also a type of relationship.
But the difference between them, one will be buster oriented or on some level, not really, but.
I'm saying, I'm not sure that you're right about that. If it would meant act of literally, then it would be buster oriented. If it means act in terms of belonging to the same tribe, then it's also maybe relationship. Somebody who can't marry into the tribe doesn't belong to the tribe, so to speak. Even on a tribal level, it doesn't necessarily have to be both oriented.
Right.
So be identity oriented. Right?
So what is the defining point? One is saying the fact that we share mitzvahs in some level is enough of a ground, and the other one is so what?
No, I understand, but I'm saying this admixture may not necessarily be a both or focus. I assume you meant both or qua both, specifically,
right,
in terms of the name. May I ask that,
right?
Okay, I'm not sure. Maybe you're right. I have to think about it. That's certainly a fascinating thing, of course. Continues the Mishnah Cheresh Sheik V'Kotin to the Atan Ra'ah. Okay, that led us to the question of whether a woman owns property. As usual, we leave out the important part, which is that the same thing is true. If a woman damages, there's no way for her to pay back. But then after she gets divorced, after the guy, she has money. Now here we have an interesting question, because it turns out that Reb Shmuel Bar Abba's mother was married twice. She had an affinity for people named Abba. So, you know, that sort of makes things easier to call, you know, because you end up calling him Abba anyway, so might as well start right. So she, at first she marries, she has a child named Shmuel, that's the famous Shmuel Bar Abba in the Agonia. She remarries Abba the second, but she wants to keep her property in a way that it, when she dies, it should go not to her husband, but to her son from her first marriage. So what does she do? So even in Shumba Barabba Mehaguni Abba Nesiva Lala Rav Abba, she was married to Rav Abba. Katvina Lanichse, she writes her Nechotim over to Rav Shmuel Bar Abba Bira, to her son. Now obviously when she writes over her Nechotim, meaning her Nechse Malub, which are still hers, but Nechse Malub, the pillows go to the husband as long as she's alive. So obviously this is going to get us into the issue of whether it is possible to give or sell things that you own, but you don't have a kinyan teres. Which brings up the whole question of kinyan teres to kinyan agul tami, and does the husband own the nechasim legabe tzel, or can she still sell it, or give it? In this case, she gave it. And this, of course, is the very central to the whole Jewish way of making wills. Essentially, we give what is known as a living bequest, in which you give the property, get the tax break, but continue to live off of the payroll so long as you're alive. That's what she did.
What's that? She dies to Kenyan on the payroll as well, too.
If she dies?
If she dies, the second husband, Kenyan on the payroll, is still with her. As long as he's alive, he gets the second.
Right, he would then be Yorisher normally.
Right, but in,
but here he wasn't Yorisher. So she died, and he goes, and he sues her current husband, Abba. He wants to take the money. And they come to get, this is a very Abba-oriented sugya, they come to Reb Yirmiyah Bar Abba's court, who get a different Abba. It wasn't a relative fashioning this halacha. So he goes now, Reb Shmuel Bar Abba comes to Reb Yirmiyah Bar Abba, and Reb Yirmiyah Bar Abba says it was a valid gift, and he gives him over her nechot. Reb Abba went and said over the whole story to Reb Hoshea, and Reb Hoshea said it over in front of Reb Yehuda, and Reb Yehuda said, no, this doesn't sound right, because Shmuel said, Ha'isha she'machra b'nitzei meluv b'chayei ba'ala, which is essentially what she did over here. She gave away her nitzei meluv. It's just she gave it to her son. That's irrelevant in terms of her rights to nechatim. Here it says a woman who sold her nitzei meluv. And again, nitzei meluv means where she owns the actual property. The husband has rights to the payload as long as she's living. And she dies. Nonetheless, ha'ba'al motzi miyad alekuchot. That the husband can now take it away from the buyers. And in this case, the husband, who survived her, Ava, the second, should be able to take it away from the buyers, so to speak, in this case, the recipient, which ruled by Ava. So, you seem to be wrong here. We'll see. Well, yeah, obviously, it relates to the king of Paris. There may be other ones, right? Amor kamed Rav Yirmiya bar Abba. So they went and told Rav Yirmiya bar Abba what Shmuel had said. And Rav Yehuda came back and said, it seems to have been a mistake. Amar lahu. So he said to them, well, I can't tell you what Shmuel means, but I sure can tell you a Mishnah, and I'd like you to get out of this one. Anamat Mutayada. I know a Mishnah. The Mishnah says, somebody who gives over his property, again, this is a very central idea in Jewish world, he gives over his property to his son for after his death, which is interpreted to mean that it's a living bequest. In other words, the property will remain the father's only insofar as the payers are concerned during the time that he remains in life, and after his death, the son gets the whole shebang. Now, the point of this, as we'll see, is to get around the limitations on reassigning. We don't have a concept of a will. The Torah defines the will. Over here, he wants to give a gift that will cut out other members of the family. So let's say he has a number of sons, and he wants a particular son to get something. He can give this in his lifetime as a gift, and then at his death, the value of the gift, up until that point, it isn't very valuable, but at his death, now the payroll also will go to the son. Now, yeah, and this is the same exact case. The mother gave away her property, and even though someone else was keeping control of the payroll, right? I mean, it's basically the same idea. You're giving away property. In this case, you yourself control the payroll. But the point is that you don't own the payroll, and that the gift relates to payrolls which will only arrive later, after death. You're giving over a theoretical value in a thing at this point, you can't get anything out of it, but nonetheless, you're a violent for the ultimate use of the payroll. Now, it says over there that in such a case, the ben eino yochol limkor mipnei shein b'rushutav. So the ben cannot actually sell this property now so that someone else will be able to use it because the father's using it. But the father can't sell the property because he doesn't own it. And they're excluding the ben. So what happens if they each do go ahead and sell? What's the interpretation of that sale? The interpretation is that if the father sells, it means that he's selling his rights to the parents, essentially. Okay, so if he does sell, then that right, of course, he can't sell more than the right that he has. He only has the rights until he dies. So he can sell his rights until he dies. So then whoever bought them off of him will continue to eat the parents. The moment the father dies, the seller is out of luck. The buyer, I mean, is out of luck. The son, the interpretation of the sale of a son would be that Makar Haben Ein Lo 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 Keach Hachi Amuta'at. He gets nothing out of this until the father dies. Okay, but Ki Mayat'av, what does that mean to you? I mean, I read the Mishnah. You can read the Mishnah too. Ki Mayat'av, when the father dies, who gets the property? The Lo Keach, correct? Now, does the Mishnah distinguish between the case where the son dies first or the father dies first? I mean, I know what you're going to try to tell me. You're going to try to tell me. Of course. Over there, the father dies, and the son gets it, and then once he gets it, now it's transferred to the buyer. But if the son never gets it, how can we transfer it? The Mishnah doesn't say that. The Mishnah says that the moment that the father dies, whether it's in the lifetime of the son, not in the lifetime of the son, the buyer gets it, which implies that the sale of the son at that time, not later. The son may be dead at the time that the buyer gets it. The sale of the son was valid in being able to give over something that he had no control of payers for, but he would give over the ultimate control of payers. That's exactly what the woman did over here, right? The woman had no control of the payers now. She's in the same position as the son except the son. The father controlled the affairs of her, the husband controlled the affairs. She sells it, in this case, she gives it to her son. She dies, so she never gets it herself, but nonetheless, it's exactly the same as this case. When the son dies, the individual who bought it from the son gets it as soon as the father dies, whether the son is alive or not. See, here's the same thing. When she dies, now the son gets it, even though it originally had been in the hands of the father. And I'll make it clear to you, by the way, that it's correct to be bedayik, that al pagav demet habein b'chayei ha'av. I'll show this to you in a minute. If the Mishnah is clearly talking about even though the son died before the father, the law to the day of Ben never got into the son's hand. And that goes like the Shimon ben Lucky, but it happens to be those three halachas where we pass that Rish Lakish against Rish Yochanan. This is one of those three halachas. Nobody can argue on that. And that's already a fact everybody has accepted, that Rish Lakish said, the Omar, lo shna meit ha-bein v'chayei ha'av, it doesn't matter in the least whether the son dies during the father's lifetime, in which case lo hatu liyada the bank, in which case it never got into the son's hands anyway, and it doesn't matter lo shna meit ha'av v'chayei ha'bein, or whether the father dies first, or one could view it as going through the reshus of the son into the hands of the lokeach. That's not how it works. Where it does the ha'bein, the din is b'kana lokeach in either event. Shall we think about this machlokes for a minute? Let's take a break, says the Gemara. The Itzma. Here's the machlokes. Malchar ha'bein b'chayei ha'av. Umeit ha'bein b'chayei ha'av. What about this case? The case that we had, the son sells it, the father has kept the rights, and the son dies early, never inherits those rights. Was his sale a good sale or not? Rabbi Yochanan says, no. In that case, lo kanalo keach. But Rish Lakish says, kanalo keach. The basis for the machlokes is Rabbi Yochanan, lo kanalo keach. Those words in the Mishnah that say when the son sells, the buyer doesn't get anything until the father dies, which implies to all of us that once the father does die, if he might have eaten a little care, then the buyer does have, was only referring to a case, the law made habim b'chayah, where the son didn't die young in the lifetime of his father, in which case, it got into the hands of the son, so that what we look at is that the sale was essentially an option, so that when I, son, get it, I transfer those rights to you. But I can't sell you more than an option, because that's all I have. So therefore, if, unfortunately, I can never exercise my option, you can't exercise your option, because I die young, and therefore I can't exercise it. In a case where the son himself can't ever get it, so then the lokeach also can't get it, which means to you what? Let's analyze the machlokas. Alma katsava kinyan peirot kinyan agub dami, which means that the right of the father to the produce of this field means that he's the owner and he has a kinyan agub. Therefore, when the son tries to sell something that someone else is the owner of, obviously we lay up a matter of course. But he's of in Lazi Days of it. He can't sell the actual property. All he can sell are options. And options need to be realizable by the seller in order for the buyer to get anything out of it. Whereas Rabbi Shimon and Lakish are in there. This is all by the court of our aside. We're just trying to get an insight into, we're going to come back now to the words of Rabbi Yirmi of Arava and his response to Rabbi Yehuda. But this is an aside to bring us up to date. Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, on the other hand, who says kind of lokeach, he says, no, those words in the Mishnah that we're all agreed on, that says, makar ben en lokeach ad shiyamuta av, which implies timayat av, when the father does die, that's certainly miyatit ben lokeach. I say, lo shnal lo met ha ben v'chaya av, doesn't matter in the least to me, if the son didn't die in the father's lifetime, in which case he was able to exercise an option, and ultimately they are bent, but it doesn't matter if it's the other way. In which case, the law to the other event, he was never able to get it himself. Who cares? Because at the time that he sold it, he was selling a piece of land that belonged to him. It's just that other people had temporary rights to it. Those temporary rights didn't make them owners. Therefore, you see clearly, according to Rish Lakish, the ownership, in that case, of the father of the peros, doesn't mean anything. And he could sell it, because he's Kozlovin, DJ Kozlovin. He's selling his own field in advance, and now who cares whether he's alive or dead? He already sold it. Not selling an option, he's selling a field. So as soon as the father dies, who was in the way, the father was using the product, but he had nothing to do with the sale. He was in the way, his father died, who he now owns the field. Why shouldn't he collect his own payroll? I'm not selling the payroll, I sold the field.
I rented a property for 2 years, and I'm selling the property that I've rented, but they can't get to that one until the rent is done. Is there any difference?
Yeah, there is a difference, but in terms of possession, there's no difference. But there's not, sure, there's a major difference. Of course, ownership is not the root. This is real ownership. This is real ownership. I never gave you the right. You asked whether it's the same. It's not the same. But it's not important here. The idea of possession and ownership is logia to some extent here too. So v'chikas zovin, v'deikas zovin. So now, but that's the end of our interruption. Out of parentheses. End parentheses. The anan. Now, getting back to us. Okay, I'm talking to you now, Rav Yirmiyahu. I'm talking to you, Rav Yehuda. I'm telling you. So we're assuming now in our discussion over here that Ben Rav Yirmiyahu and Ben Rav Yehuda, that both people in the discussion, Rav Yirmiyahu and Rav Yehuda, are now talking to each other. They're both making the assumption that the law is conscription and the law is that nobody can argue on, and that's the fact. Clearly. Because we passed them on that. Okay? So what's Rav Yirmiyahu now saying? The comment Rav Yirmiyahu now, Rav Yirmiyahu has turned to Rav Yehuda and he says, look, man, I know a Mishnah. Meaning, and you know the Mishnah too, and you know that law of Akash Lakish, and therefore, what are the implications? What I'm telling you between the lines is, what are you trying to say? You're trying to say that over here, the mother who gave her child the field was not able to give it to Rav Shmuel Bar Abba because she didn't own the parish. And in your parish, you can not group them. So then you have to say the same thing about that Mishnah. So in a case where the father dies, where the son had died earlier, how come the buyer in that case gets to collect? I thought he could only sell the option and keep Kozovin. He wasn't selling his own field. Just like you're claiming the mother had no right to give her field to Rav Shmuel Bar Abba, her son. So don't come sending me messages from Shmuel. Abdullah came to review this, so they went back to review it, and they said, this seems to be right. Hallelujah, he said to them, believe me, Shmuel thought about this already. And Shmuel said, Zui Nadom of the Mishnah. He said it, as he said the fact that I bring you here. He said, and don't bring me a riot for that mission. It's not the same. My time of war, why is it not the same? Rabbi Yosef, because I'll tell you, if you would want to bring a riot from a Mishnah like this, then if it would have said it in the other direction, say where a son would write a sale as a living bequest to his father, now that would prove something. If I would say, Akotev Nechasev La'aviv, right, which would have everything exactly the same except in the inverse. What's the beauty of the inverse? It's very simple. If I make it the inverse meaning all along, in other words, it's the father who sold, and now the question is, did the father die in the lifetime of the son, and did the buyer from the father get the right to the field which the son had the right to the payer? Same decades, but inverted. There's only one simple distinction. The son was in line to inherit from the father, but the father wasn't normally in line to inherit from the son, right? That's a distinction. That's a very important distinction. I know you think it's not meaningful. That's very meaningful. Because how do we know that that element of the ultimate inheritance is not an important issue? For two possible reasons. Rashi learns that the reason is that in order for me to give you something which you're going to inherit anyway, why am I exercising myself and not just wait till I die? Now the answer to that is obvious. That's why Rashi's chat is a little bit sticky. The answer to that is because there's other sons he's trying to lock out. Why else is somebody trying to write a will? And that's the point of writing a will. Okay. But anyway, that's how Rashi learns it. He meant to imply by giving it to his son, who anyway he assumed would inherit him, that if I'm giving it to you in this way, I mean to strengthen your hand to be able to even sell against my lien on the parents. And this is not a normal, can your parents kick me out both? Because I'm giving away my rights to the limits that that would normally place upon your ability to sell. It's a standard situation. It's Nichsen Malug. Nobody created this Nichsen Malug. She got married. She had things. Maybe Kinyan Teirot is normally Kinyan HaGuf, but somebody isn't going out of his way to give it away. That's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it, which some of the other Rishonim learned, is more fundamental. It's not a question of his das. It's a question of whether the potential for Yerusha also provides an element of ownership in that which is meant to be yours because of the Yerusha and is already currently yours because of the gift. To Bishlema, normally you could say that until there's the actual exercise of ownership, which would require that the father not be here to take the parrot, so you could say in a kinami, you're not an owner. It's the parrot man who's the owner. But over here, the whole point of Yerusha is that you never have to really exercise it. It's in Morashat Gilat Yaakov. It's yours. It's meant to be yours. That's a whole different idea. Something that's meant to be yours isn't looked at in the same way just because somebody's in the way right now who's eating the parrot. It's not a question of his dad. It's a reality. Who's going to inherit? So therefore, since now he stands to inherit, that can't prove to you that all over King and Paris is lofty King and Agrup. It's because of the additional strength of the inheritance that King and Paris lofty King and Agrup done it. And if it had wanted to bring out the din in that Mishnah, the whole point that you're claiming, Rish Lakish, the fact that Rish Lakish says, well, it doesn't seem to matter who dies first, which doesn't say anything about that. If that was the point of the Mishnah, then it would have been very simple to construct the same exact case and just say the son gave it to his father. But you have to say it this way. I say that this is an important distinction. So it comes on to the altar. That's what Shmuel was thinking. He basically coming in because it had said it in the other direction. But I could say, Mechasavla, Aviv, fine. Then you could have said, Ikal, and you've shot me now. The king is there, wrote, Lot, the king is there, group, Dami. No. Maybe the reason that over here we don't look at the king and our group as being in the way is because of the kayak of the Yerusha, from the royal Yarshohu. Either as Rashi learns, because you must have meant to give him more, because otherwise he was going to inherit it anyway. So what's the point giving it now? And some of the Balayat places to learn that royal Yarshohu, therefore you have more rights to it because you're a royal Yarshohu. That's the thing, I don't get it. I mean, nobody talked to you about the strange ways of the world in which fathers inherit sons quite often? Not only sons inherit fathers? I mean, well, what do you mean? It only goes in one direction. Inheritance only goes in one direction. Okay, but what... Fine, but I mean, certainly in terms of potential for inheritance, I mean, how does that make a difference? And so obviously the understanding over here is that he had a point. His point was that La Bruchino Lenichsei Mibreikasi. You're saying, okay, I mean, the idea over here is when a guy, normally a man, writes something to his father, that's a pretty strange thing to do. I mean, why does he want to take it? He's trying to disinherit his son. That's the point, right? His own son. That would have been the meaning. And therefore, according to Rashi, saying Mechazik, wherever. Okay, but if that's the case, okay, Namela Brooklyn lives in Yapua. It's the same exact case is true over here. Why is a father writing a living gift when anyway he could assume that his son will inherit him, and he's not giving him anything now that he's going to benefit from? I mean, obviously this is a legality. What he's trying to do is he's trying to disinherit the other brother. So what do you mean? So why then would he write it? He wrote it because he wanted him to be disinherited, not because he wanted to limit his rights to the parents that would allow him to sell it. So there was no intent of giving a special right. In this case, look at my king of parents differently than you would look at the king of parents of a ball in this same alone. No, why? Why would I think that? In which case, it is perfectly the same as our Mishnah. Don't give me the analysis of Rabbi Yosef. If you want to tell me that it's not the same as the Mishnah, you're going to have to look into a completely different area out of left field. Elamai ina domina vishnatenu. You know what's more, man? Even Sakonas Usha. Sakonas Usha, the famous Sakonas Usha, which is that they were malim, they made stronger the rights of a Baal to his wife's things to prevent exactly this type of situation, because it is extremely unhealthy for a relationship, for a woman to be selling out from under her husband's nose the property that supposedly she brought into the marriage, that supposedly he has available if she dies, and now all of a sudden, well, she sells it to somebody else, and she's going around in her trip around the world. What kind of business is that? So because of the sakana of Eva, they made a sakana in Usha, that a husband, but that's special for a husband, a husband's right to nixay payroll, the payroll of nixay malut, it's strong enough to prevent the sale. But normally, you're right. The other Mishnah implies, like the Shlokah says, that Kinyan Peres is lost to Kinyan Aguv, and that the son would be able to sell it. But this particular case is that corner, the Rabban, that Kinyan Peres is in fact stronger because it's about Kinyan Peres. That's all arbitrary. And therefore the Mechira, in this case the gift to her, what? Not Yerusha. It's not a Yerusha, it's a gift. She's trying to give away a gift to some from the first marriage. There's no difference between giving away and selling. She cannot. That's why it's different. Don't try to bring me, what do you mean? But Shmuel didn't take this into consideration. All he says is the Mishnah doesn't, this case that you're saying would not be the same. Any other Kinyan group, yes. But this special case is always going to be unique. Why? Because it's like on a Zusha. The Omer of Yosef Hanina. Buusha hitkinu ha'isha shemachra b'nechsei malut b'kayei ba'ala u'meta ha'bal mosim yada l'kufa. And that is a special situation, and that's because of what Shmuel said is still correct, even in the context of this Mishnah. And therefore, you, in arguing with Shmuel, are attempting to argue on this on Takana Dusha. And you cannot apply the din of the Mishnah to the case of Rav Shmuel Bar Abba.
There's no context where
not around this same alone.
Why do we should discuss this?